Portsmouth. I'm Rick Ganley, NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire House was in the spotlight this week, and House members voted yesterday on an issue that's generated huge debate this year, casino gambling. It's a top priority for Governor Hassan, whose budget is based partly on the hope of $80 million in license fees. A majority of state senators want a casino as well. But on Thursday, the House overwhelmingly voted down one measure that would have allowed two casinos. It decided to put off, or table, another gambling bill, meaning its fate is unclear. Meantime, House members didn't put off decisions on plenty of other matters. They voted to raise the tobacco tax, to allow medical marijuana, to decriminalize possession of small amounts of pot, and to reject an attempt to block the expansion of Medicaid. Also in the news this week, a key figure in state politics stepped down, Attorney General Michael Delaney, and far outside the Statehouse dome, national Republicans began planning their presidential nominating process for 2016. So far, New Hampshire's leadoff position looks pretty good. Today in The Exchange, we're wrapping up the news of the week, and let's hear from you. What votes in the legislature have you been following? What do you make of some of the key issues decided this week, such as medical marijuana, Medicaid expansion, or the prospect of paying higher taxes for gasoline and tobacco? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us. Josh Rogers is here, NHPR's senior political reporter and editor. And Josh, I know you're busy. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome, Laura.
Also with us, Dan Tuohy, associate regional editor for Patch.com in New Hampshire. Dan Tuohy, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Dean, to you first, but all of you, what would you say is the most important news coming out of the Statehouse this week?
A couple of things. I think probably the passage of the medical marijuana proposal in the House by a veto-proof majority. Governor Lynch vetoed medical marijuana twice in 4 years. Governor Hassan has signaled support for medical marijuana. She has some concerns about the ability of individuals to grow their own marijuana. So I think there's going to be some discussion about kind of the distribution mechanism. So I think that's very important. We may finally get some sort of legislation on medical marijuana or cannabis for therapeutic uses, as they call it in the legislation. The other thing that really caught my attention was a paring back of both of the revenue proposals in Governor Hassan's budget. So she had proposed a 15-cent gas tax. The House is now
repaired.
Let me be clear about that. Right. The suggestion has been that there should be a 15-cent. She's been very kind of cautious about actually literally proposing it. But I think the sense is that she wants some revenue from gas tax. She's actually been very cautious about not saying anything more than she wants a consensus.
Putting it on Representative Campbell,
bill it is. Sort of a Freudian slip there. But in any event, the proposals for a gas tax have now been rolled from 15 cents down to 12 cents. The cigarette tax has also been pared down from 30 cents to 20 cents. So their proposals are still out there for these sources of revenue, but we're already seeing kind of the budgetary process kicking in. And the reality is we'll probably have something a little bit different in June when the conference completes the work on the final budget. So medical marijuana and the sense that while revenue is being discussed, we're already seeing kind of a paring back of the taxes.
Sure, and we'll definitely dig into those this hour. What do you think, Josh? What would you add to that list of most significant action in the Statehouse this week?
Well, I would agree that medical marijuana is going to be interesting to watch. I think that the development in the House around the casino bills that they had was significant. The rejection of one bill that would have allowed one casino along the Massachusetts border and one in the White Mountains was a sound rejection, 249 to 65. That was expected. That bill wasn't particularly well-crafted and didn't have much support. Obviously, we're waiting to see what the House does when it actually takes up the measure passed by the Senate that's backed by Governor Hassan. More interesting was the decision to table a second bill allowing up to six slot machine parlors. That's sponsored by Representative Steve Valancourt. Six state-run slot machine parlors.
State-run? Now,
yes.
What does that mean?
Well, that would mean that the state would be operating them and not farming it out as is contemplated in the other casino bills. And it would be, open bid. It essentially replicates proposals that current Manchester mayor and former state senate president Ted Gatzis championed. Whether or not we end up, they decided to table that bill on a 170 to 160 vote. The pitch there was to potentially preserve a negotiating position should you know, the Senate stand firm on its gambling proposal. So this keeps this debate alive. And you know, certainly what a lot of people around the Capitol are talking about this week, the Coalition Against Expanded Gambling had a luncheon for lawmakers. It was very well attended. The governor's office is certainly reaching out urgently to lawmakers as well, particularly focusing on freshman members. We don't really have a sense of how those folks where they stand on gambling because they haven't voted on it before. So the churn on gambling is something that is going to, you know, be with us, you know, from here until the summer, basically.
Right.
But
huge issue.
But it'll be interesting to see, you know, where the chips fall.
Right. Pardon the pun, but yeah, they're hard to avoid when you talk about gambling. I understand. Dan, Dean and Josh have listed some pretty big stuff happening at the State House. Anything else you would add to that?
Absolutely. The vote to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana, the bill came in as introduced, was up to 1 ounce. It was amended to up to a quarter of an ounce. But one other thing that Josh said about the gambling bills that came up in the House, the takeaway that I found was in the House debate, some reps were talking about let's have not just one location but two locations. It shouldn't be a monopoly for one location in southern New Hampshire or wherever the casino might be.
So the assumption has always been southern New Hampshire would be that one place. And some folks in the House, you're saying, Dan, are going, well, wait a minute. We shouldn't settle on this so early in the process.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and we'll dig into all of these this hour. I want to invite our listeners to join us to the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. What issues in the news have you been following, especially the many votes taken at the State House this week? 1-800-892-6477. If you want to give us your thoughts on some of the key issues that our guests have talked about already, medical marijuana, decriminalizing possession of small amounts of marijuana, also the paring back, as Dean Spiliotis said, of proposals to increase the gas tax and tobacco tax, and if you want to jump in on the casino gambling debate, certainly that is a huge issue, as Josh Rogers has said. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Let's talk a little bit more about the gambling, gentlemen, because Josh, you're so right. It's just, you almost could call it the dominant issue this year. Dean Spiliotis, just remind us of the political dynamics of this, why this is so important this time around.
Well, because Governor Hassan has pinned a number of funding increases for things like education, mental health, other social programs to that $80 million licensing fee. So there's been a lot of debate about whether or not that $80 million figure is attainable, whether it's more, whether it's less, whether the costs or benefits are really there. But the issue is she has kind of pinned her hopes budgetarily. And if nothing else, the sort of public discussion around the budget has hinged on this $80 million. The thing that struck me is very interesting this week. The House budget writers have said they're not going to include that $80 million in their appropriations bill.
We're not going to count on it.
It's not legal yet, so they're saying by the rules of the House they can't include it in the budget. This is actually an opportunity for the Hassan administration to say, okay, let's see if you can come up with money for these programs without that $80 million. What are you going to cut? Where are you going to get the revenue? So I think in an odd way, it's a little bit of an opportunity for the governor to say, okay, let's see you do it without the $80 million, and let's see if you can provide the same benefits that I'm offering. I think they've been very smart in really trying to leverage that $80 million among Democrats who might otherwise oppose gambling and say, you know, give me the one casino license and I'll give you mental health money, I'll give you education money, et cetera. So there is a little bit of an attitude in the administration's week of, okay, show us what you can do without that $80 million and we'll show you a better way to do it.
That must be upsetting for House Democrats, though, Dean.
Well,
huh?
I think it puts them in a bind. I think you've seen some of them kind of push back a little bit. The Anti-Gaming Coalition had a luncheon for 150 House members this week to try to provide sort of anti-gaming information to them. Some Democrats kind of spoke out at that luncheon in opposition to gambling. I think this is a tough one because you got a new governor who controls the chamber, needs the support. This is going to be an interesting test of kind of party cohesion in the state.
Josh.
Well, the luncheon, former House Finance Chair Marjorie Smith, she spoke at this luncheon and she said that what the governor is and her office is setting up is this false choice, the idea that the money, the $80 million, is necessarily tied to higher education, to mental health, to programs that the Democrats may want to support is, you know, is good advertising, is how she put it, but not valid. And she also openly questioned the idea that the $80 million could actually arrive to be used within this next budget cycle. And certainly people who are familiar with gambling say that it's often common that these license fees would be held in escrow and that it wouldn't become available to budget writers. So Dean is right that that's the argument that that the governor's office is making, that you know, without this money, these programs will be decimated. But you know, $80 million within the context of a huge budget, there's money coming in, there's money coming out. There are tough decisions that are going to be made down the line at every step of the process between now and when a final budget is agreed upon. And so we don't really know what the implications are. And, you know, money comes in, money comes out. There are a lot of twists and turns. And so, you know, in the scheme of things, that $80 million is surely potentially significant. But it's not going to decide a budget one way or the other.
Can I just ask you one quick question, Josh, about some of the lobbying around this issue? Because it's confusing to outsiders. The New Hampshire State Troopers Association and the New Hampshire Police Association are in favor of Governor Hassan's casino approach. But the New Hampshire Association of Chiefs of Police is against it. Both sides in recent weeks have used these groups as sort of saying, see, look, gambling is dangerous. It's going to increase crime. See, look, gambling's not that bad. The troopers are for it. Can you sort this out for us, please?
Well, I mean, it comes down to the troopers and the police association see the potential for increased public safety budgets. And you know, they would argue that they're more it's going to be it's a money issue. And the chiefs of police say it's going to bring crime. When the Troopers Association, the Police Association, had a press conference earlier this week, you know, a fellow from the Police Association stood up and said, you know, we've looked at this and we've studied this, and the implications in terms of public safety are no more than putting in a large shopping mall. And it didn't provide anything to back that up, but that was their contention. But it's really a question of money versus law enforcement, and they've always been skeptical from the Attorney General's office, you know, on down to the chiefs.
Speaking of the Attorney General's office, in just a moment, we're going to talk about Attorney General Michael Delaney stepping down. That was a big announcement this week. We'll keep taking your calls, too. We'd love your thoughts and comments on some of the news of the week. 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning, and more of our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup coming up at 10 o'clock. It's the Friday News Roundup, the domestic hour on the Diane Rehm Show. You have a unique set of experiences and expertise, and we'd like you to help us with our news coverage and join our Public Insight Network and let us know which stories we should consult you on. You can find out more about PIN at nhpr.org. Mostly cloudy for most of the state today. A few breaks of sunshine possible in southern New Hampshire. There could be a few snow showers, particularly across northern New Hampshire. Highs 33 to 38 statewide. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Unity Homes from Bensonwood, Route 12 Walpole, hosting an open house and home tour Saturday, March 30th. Information and reservations at unityhomes.com/openhouse. And New Hampshire's community colleges committed to increasing the number of science, technology, engineering, and math graduates in New Hampshire. CCSNH.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're wrapping up the week's news here in the Granite State. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Already, we've looked into the big debate of this legislative session over casino gambling and some key votes in the House this week. If you want to give us your thoughts on that, you can join us. We've also talked about the approval of legalization in the House of medical marijuana, and the House paring back two proposals, one to increase the gas tax and one to increase the tobacco tax to smaller increases. We'd love your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Dan Tuohy, I wanted to open up this next segment with you talking about the state's top law enforcement official, Michael Delaney, announcing he's stepping down. The Attorney General, having served in that position for about 3.5 years. Was this expected, Dan?
His term is up on March 31st, so some people were wondering, including MUR, was questioning, like, or what's going to happen? Will the governor come out with her first nominee for Attorney General. So he came out in, this week and said he's going to step down and return to the private sector after more than 14 years in the Department of Justice. Since 2009 as Attorney General, he's naturally butted heads with the legislature, as Attorney Generals are wont to do, including most recently over the Affordable Care Act and whether the state should be join lawsuits against it. But he, you know, naturally, as a leader of law enforcement, he had some a very high profile with some major, major crimes in the state of New Hampshire, including the one that comes to my mind is the murder of Michael Maloney over in Greenland.
Right, right. The police chief there. And
yes.
Very tragic circumstances around that a couple days before he was set to retire. And it was during a drug bust, I think. So it was a big deal.
Right.
Dan, you mentioned a case I want to ask Josh Rogers about. He's right. Attorney generals often butt heads with the legislature. But Michael Delaney really seemed to butt heads with the legislature in the past couple of years, Josh.
Well, the legislature is also sort of spoiling for a fight on separation of powers issues. House Speaker Bill O'Brien was dead set on having the state join the lawsuit against Obamacare. The Attorney General was disinclined to join the lawsuit. This was put to a vote. The court said ultimately the Attorney General's right. The legislature can't force the executive branch agency to join the lawsuit. And, you know, certainly Delaney came to the office. He had spent a long time in the AG's office, but he came most directly, having been a legal counsel to Governor Lynch for several years. And, you know, as Dan said, certainly there were some tough things that happened to the Department of Justice during his tenure. Certainly the Maloney death and you know, the subsequent report that showed that the drug task force and the whole way that they approached that bust was ill-handled. Certainly, the Attorney General was in the thick of the investigation of the FRM Ponzi scheme, something out of which no one really came out looking terribly good. And he was also involved in some political things that went wrong, such as Governor Lynch and the and Attorney General Delaney decided to try to remove Liquor Commissioner Mark Bodie. And, there were hearings and that ended up, Bodie ended up keeping his job. That was sort of an egg on his face. But certainly Attorney General Delaney's young-ish. He's had a lot of experience. Some people talk about him, as a potential political candidate in the future. I guess we'll see. He was pretty clear that he wanted to return to private practice and that was the best thing for his family. Who Governor Hassan picks, there's a lot of attention on that. And obviously, every attorney general alive, except for Tom Rath, who's actually now working on behalf of the casino industry, opposes expanded gambling. And there's going to be a lot of scrutiny of whomever Governor Hassan picks on that front.
Do you think that was a point of tension and partly why he decided to leave? There was some speculation that he was strongly opposed to casinos and he didn't feel comfortable working for a governor who is so much in favor.
Well, I mean, I have no direct knowledge of that. Certainly, it has been the default position of the New Hampshire Department of Justice to oppose casinos.
Well, and here's an email just based on what you said. This is from Peg in Concord. She says, "So sorry to learn he's leaving the AG's office. He's been on the right side of so many issues and handled some very difficult cases. Hope to see him again in public life." Do you want to add on to that, Dan Toohey? Is Attorney General Michael Delaney going to run for governor or Congress or something?
Sure. He's only 43. That's what he sometimes thinks of someone in his position. He's such a responsibility, a lot of weight on the shoulders, a lot of professionalism, a lot of experience. So he has plenty of years ahead, whether he chooses to head to the private sector and then decide with his wife and family. But on a side note to what Josh said about, as soon as the announcement came out this week, a few people were already asking or saying the Attorney General in New Hampshire should be elected. And we've heard this over and over and over in the years. And
instead of appointed by the governor.
Yes. And bills have been filed. Tony DeFruscia, a former state rep from Wyndham and an attorney, has filed some bills over the past 10 years. And I wouldn't be surprised we'll see another bill in the next session to propose that very same issue.
All right. Well, Peg, thanks for that email. Again, if you want to email us your questions or comments about some of the news items that you heard this week, you can join us with your questions or thoughts at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Dean Spiliotis, I want to return to something that you said in the beginning of the hour. You said you thought it was real interesting to watch the House this week pare back two tax proposals, the gas tax and the tobacco tax. Just politically, Dean, why do you think they're doing this?
Well, I think because the goal is to get the legislation through a Republican-controlled Senate. You look at the gas tax, for example. You know, the House earlier this month passed a 15-cent tax on gas, but then the House Ways and Means Committee voted 11-7 now to pare that down. The vote was 11-7 split along party lines. The gas tax has been said to be dead on arrival in the Senate. There's not a lot of support over in the Senate. So I think part of it is just a political reality. I mean, you know, in a sense, the governor's budget address in February really is kind of a first move in a much longer chess match. And as you correctly pointed out at the beginning, she didn't actually call for a gas tax. It was one of the few areas in her budget address where she wasn't explicit. But if you listen to what she said over the last few weeks, she keeps talking about needing a consensus on the issue, but it's not a popular issue. So there's no reason to kind of stick your neck out unnecessarily. And so I think that, you know, this is going to be, we're going to go through multiple iterations of this. The question is going to be coming up with something either on gas or cigarettes. And the cigarette tax is sort of similar issues in terms of cost benefits. You know, some people want a higher tax because it will, in theory, decrease the amount of smoking that, that young people do. But other people think it could be a potentially an economic loss to small businesses. You know, this is part of the political process, and I'm not surprised to see it, but it was interesting to see it happen on both of these two key sources roughly at the same time. And I think it's a recognition that you don't have unified government, you don't have a Democratic Senate to kind of push this stuff through.
Yeah, so just to get the facts and figures out there, Josh, the House voted to raise the tobacco tax 20 cents, Hassan wanted 30. And again, as Dean said, the panel, the House committee, voted to raise the gas tax by 12 cents instead of the 15 cents that David Campbell, the chief sponsor, wanted. So that's the paring back that Dean's talking about. Talk about, if you could, the gas tax for a moment. As Dean's correctly pointed out, the Senate has said this is dead on arrival. So why is the House even bothering?
Well, there is agreement among leaders of both House and Senate that the situation with our transportation budgeting and the roads needs to be addressed with significant amounts of money. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Morse sees a casino, he's from Salem, as the best way to raise money to do this. David Campbell and members of the House believe a gas tax, you know, now 12 cents, you know, phased in would be the best way to do this. Governor Hassan has said she wants consensus. It's been important for her to reach out to the Republican-controlled Senate, narrowly held, you know, for her to get many agenda items through as the legislative session progresses, and also to get a strong vote for the casino bill. And she received a very strong vote for that, 16-8, a couple of weeks ago. So she doesn't want to get in the middle of a fight. And but she has said we need money, and it is true that you are going to need consensus in order to pass this. The political implications of a big hike to the gas tax remain to be seen. Surely, as this moved through the House, conservatives in the House and outside groups such as American for Prosperity made it pretty clear that they're going to be going after Republicans in particular who supported the tax. You can already essentially see the mailers. The talking point was the largest tax increase in New Hampshire history. Former House Speaker Bill O'Brien was saying that over and over again. As this moves along, you know, we'll see where everyone gets to. But this is going to be a key part of budget negotiations, you know, until they settle things.
And the tobacco tax there again, just to reiterate, Dan, the full House voted to raise it 20 cents. Governor Hassan wanted 30 cents. What do you see as involved in that decision, paring it down by 10 cents? And how do you think the Senate's going to feel about this?
Well, we'll find out. the 20 cent increase will bring it to 188 a pack. And as Dean mentioned, the concern or the debate in the House this week was what that means, if anything, to cross-border sales.
Right.
It would still be the lowest cigarette tax rate in New England, but that's always been sensitive among, you know, Rockingham County, Salem, you know, towns and cities near the Mass border. Because it's, as Lori Sanborn, Republican from Bedford, mentioned, you know, it's not just people don't just come over the border to buy cigarettes. They shop at our state liquor stores. They buy gas. It's a whole ripple effect of the economy.
But go ahead on the, what do you think the Senate will do?
I think with the 13-11 edge, I think some tobacco tax stands a slight edge of being approved.
Yeah, seems like it, because they were a little more in favor of tobacco taxes last session.
At a minimum, if nothing happens, the tobacco tax is going to toggle back up 10 cents, reversal of the cut that was made last session because revenue targets haven't been hit. And Governor Hassan said she's going to continue to push for 30. The appetite for that among Senate Republicans is probably going to be pretty thin.
Right. Dean.
Just to give readers some context, listeners some context, Governor Lynch raised the cigarette tax four times during his administration.
From
52 cents a pack all the way up to $1.78 a pack. So there is sort of historical precedent in the recent past for getting additional revenue out of cigarettes.
All right. Again, the number for you to join us on these two taxes, how you feel about the possibility of them going up, or if you want to chime in on some of the other topics we've covered this hour, including casino gambling, the approval of medical marijuana, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email that came in from Liz in Londonderry. She says, think I heard that New Hampshire will not be sending prisoners to for-profit facilities. Liz says, good. Who wants to talk about this? Josh?
Well, I mean, yesterday the House did vote to prohibit privatization of prisons or to be sending prisoners to any private. There is a provision in an emergency situation. Prisoners could be put in a private prison. But, you know, this is probably more of a symbolic issue than anything else at this point. Governor Hassan has said that she doesn't favor prison privatization. There were requests for proposal sent out by the Executive Council to look, and that's pending before the Executive Council, to look at prison privatization. This has been an issue that's come and gone. A lot of Democrats in particular think that this is a bad idea, that, you know, if the state's going to be in the position of at least purportedly rehabilitating its prisoners, then that runs afoul of sending them to companies who have a profit motive to, you know, keep prisoners, you know, coming in and out of their jails. So that's that did pass yesterday, that prohibition. But there's no pending proposal to actually privatize prisons. And if there was a decision to privatize prison, all you'd have to do is, you know, pass a law and this prohibition would be undone. So,
well, this is relevant, though, right, Josh, because they are looking at building a new women's prison. So is that part of this discussion?
That hasn't been much of a discussion. That hasn't really come up in the debate of this bill.
Okay. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Thanks for that email, Liz. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Dan Tue, I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. In addition to the House voting in favor of medical marijuana, no surprise there, they've done that several times before, they did vote to decriminalize possession of a small amount, a quarter of an ounce. Was that a surprise, Dan?
It was to me. I thought it was going to be going down. However, I've heard from, you know, members of the House even yesterday saying that this is probably going to be dead on arrival in the Senate. Again, the big surprise, another one, was the medical marijuana, or as it's called now, the therapeutic use of cannabis. It was such a wide margin for the bill passage that it even surprised people like Matt Simon with Marijuana Policy Project, who have been following this and have seen bills be approved by the legislature or by the House in the past.
Yeah, so it's that veto-proof margin, I believe, that Dean talked about. But decriminalization, Dean, there's a national trend here.
We've seen some initial forays into it in Colorado, I believe Washington as well. And there are all sorts of issues because it's still technically illegal at the federal level. So there's all sorts of questions of jurisdiction and how you enforce this, you know, from a regulatory perspective. You know, I should note that I think the House has passed decrim four times in the last 5 years.
Really?
So it's sort of an annual ritual, and it really doesn't go anyplace. You know, people who oppose medical marijuana see that as kind of a gateway for loosening the laws in general. Colorado has turned out to be a fascinating test case for all the kinds of regulatory issues that go around decriminalizing small amounts.
All right. Well, again, the email is exchange@nhpr.org. The number 1-800-892-6477. Let's go to the phones now. Kevin's joining us from Bedford. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, all. I first love your program. It's great to have this kind of forum.
Good.
You know, I think we're not talking about the big pink elephant that's in the room. You know, I did not vote for the governor, but I totally support her because she continues to try to come to the middle and find ways we need more money. So there are other casinos in other states. They're getting money. They're getting taxes. Yes, it might have some crime. We'll have to deal with it. You know, I'm tired of every time, like with the medical marijuana bill, people say, oh, if we give up this one, then, oh, pretty soon everyone will be growing acres of marijuana in my backyard. That's not the case. And the gas tax, I'm a salesman. I drive a lot. I don't mind paying gas taxes, but up till today, where's my gas tax gone to? I'm told by my reps in Concord that it's been for fish and game. So if you have a tax for gas, of gas, for roads, use it on roads. Don't fund human and health services.
Okay. I mean, yeah, and Kevin, this is great because you're raising three issues that you know, that we've talked about a little bit, but we should dig into more. So thank you for the call. Let's pick up on his last point first. He said, I don't mind paying gas taxes, Dan Toohey, but make it for roads and bridges, please. There was an amendment on that issue precisely in the House.
Exactly. David Campbell, the lead sponsor, points out that the every cent of that increase in the gas tax would go to roads and bridges. And that's, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike agree that if we're going to do it, let's do it. Let's dedicate this money, the increase in revenue, to the priority upgrades. It's an issue like the caller said from Bedford. I heard over lunch last weekend. It was a table next to me, a couple of contractors talking about the gas tax.
Really?
You don't often hear, you know, the table next to you talking about any of these other issues as much. But this is an issue that really inspires people and inflames the debate.
Yeah,
one way or the other.
And the point that he brought up, Dean, about medical marijuana, you know, questioning the fears that some people have that this will just open the door. He's saying, no, we can control this. Right. Somebody said in the House this week that this is the most tightly controlled medical marijuana bill in the country.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Just as an aside, when Kevin talked about the big pink elephant in the room and started talking about revenue, I thought we were going to a broad-based sales or income tax, but that's not where he went. Medical marijuana, there are a number of states that have already tried it around the country.
19 states,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah,
18 or 19.
Yeah, no, and I've heard this sort of gateway argument many times about that, you know, once you sort of open the door, or doors, it becomes floodgates. It is a very tightly controlled bill. Governor Hassan has been clear that it's not quite as tightly controlled as she would like. Interestingly enough, she's made yet another argument about casinos, is that if she doesn't get that $80 million, that's going to be less money for the regulatory infrastructure to oversee things like medical marijuana. So tying it in yet again. But yeah, it's a very tightly controlled bill, perhaps not quite where she wants it yet.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for calling, and we'll follow up on your casino point after a short break. We'll take your calls too if you'd like. 1-800-892-6477. Your thoughts, questions, comments on the news of the week. 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the Doctor of Nursing Practice Program at the Department of Nursing and the University of New Hampshire, advancing leadership in healthcare. Information at unh.edu, keyword DMP. And from ENH Power, offering New Hampshire residents coal-free and pure green electricity. More information online at enhpower.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
NHPR keeps you up to speed with what's going on, whether it's breaking news from across the state or the other side of the world, and now it's even easier with the new NHPR app, available for iPhone or Droid. Of course, you can stream us wherever you are and share stories with friends, but the newest feature is for your NHPR member card. The app finds the nearest businesses to you that honor the card and updates the directory every month to include the newest discounts. Download the NHPR app today.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, does government have a role in fighting obesity? At what point do public health efforts in this area become the nanny state? Email us your thoughts before the show at exchange@nhpr.org and join us Monday morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're wrapping up the news of the week here in the Granite State. You can join our conversation 1-800-892-6477. email is exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Josh Rogers, to you, one more follow-up to Kevin's call. And Kevin, thanks again for joining us. He talked about other states having casinos and they haven't, you know, gone to the dogs, so to speak. How has the experience of other states with casinos been folded into our own debate here in New Hampshire?
Well, it depends on which state you pick and what sort of expanded gambling operation you're willing to contemplate. Are you contemplating slots, barns everywhere? Are you contemplating destination casinos? Certainly the developments in Massachusetts where plans for three casinos are underway have you know, lit a fire under this debate here. People on both sides have said different things about that. You know, Chuck Morse, who's the lead Senate, one of the lead Senate sponsors, you know, in his Senate floor speech before they voted this through, he said, you know, we're going to be funding their, meaning Massachusetts, budgets if we don't have a casino of our own. People will fight about the dollar amounts, but the whole notion that if we stand pat, we are going to lose money to Massachusetts and we're going to import the social costs of gambling with, you know, New Hampshire residents going to Massachusetts to gamble, bringing those costs home. You know, Pennsylvania has been talked about in terms of Millennium Gaming. They're the folks who have the right to put a casino at Rockingham Park. They've talked about their facility in Pennsylvania as something that would be akin to what's contemplated at Rockingham Park. People say revenues there haven't been as strong as the folks from Millennium said. So, you know, it really depends what you mean by this experience of other states. Certainly the idea that gambling is not is no longer an exotic thing. That's clear. You know, critics of gambling say that, that strengthens their argument that that creates the difference about New Hampshire, that it's a remains a wholesome outdoor
family
destination,
friendly
family-friendly state. That was a point made by former GOP chairman Steve Dupree at this anti-gambling lunch this week. So, you know, there are many arguments that can be made on this, but there's no doubt that what Massachusetts is doing has intensified this debate a great deal.
Absolutely. Well, again, Kevin, thanks for that call. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Dan Toohey, since we're talking about gambling, let's talk about drinking and a vote this week to say that cities and towns could let bars continue serving alcohol till 2 in the morning, so-called last call. Right now, I think it's 1 in the morning. This came to me as a surprise. Why are they doing this?
It did as well. The three sponsors, I believe it was two representatives from Manchester and one from Rochester, sponsored as an economic vitality, really, saying businesses in New Hampshire that are serving liquor on premises should be able to compete with those in other states.
Yeah. So, in other words, they're saying people are driving up from Massachusetts to go home in New Hampshire because they're able to stay out and party later in New Hampshire.
Exactly. And the story online as well has been buzzing because people are wondering, well, 1 a.m. versus 2 a.m., is that really a big difference in New Hampshire?
Yeah, yeah. And there's the option, Dean, that towns, cities and towns can decide to stick with the 1 a.m. if they want to.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I think that I heard the figure that there's last call at 2 a.m. in something like 45 states. And this has been typically argued as kind of a safety issue that the, you know, the later you're open, the more opportunity there is for people to get into car accidents and to drive while intoxicated. And the proponents of this last call bill have argued that, well, if you look at the data, it doesn't really support that there's any significant difference between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. So it's essentially an economic argument and, you know, sort of a personal liberty argument. And again, they have the safety valve where individual localities can decide for themselves.
Well, and speaking of Manchester, because I think some of the effort came from Manchester, right, Dan? Because a lot of bars and
That's
restaurants
correct.
Down there, the revitalization of Elm Street and so forth. There was a special election this week in Manchester for the House seat of Ward 2. Now, on the one hand, listeners may be thinking, why are they asking about this? There's 400 House members, for goodness sake. So not a big deal. But Dean Spiliotis, a lot is being made of who won this seat and why. How
come? This is really interesting. You know, Ward 2 is on the northeast side of Manchester for anyone who's interested. This was a seat that was vacated after the last election. Robert Thompson, who had won the seat, a Democrat, moved to Florida. That opened the seat back up. And so we had this face-off between Democrat Bill O'Neill and Republican Wynne Hutchinson, who had been a one-term member of the House previously. O'Neill was the president of International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local, sort of a telecom workers union in Manchester, about 715 members. Hutchison, as I said, had already been a Republican member of the House. Interestingly enough, the final tally was 297 to 260 in favor of Bill O'Neill.
So pretty close.
The election was
under 10%.
Right, and the election was during the storm on Tuesday. They actually held it at a closed school. So that's problematic as well. But what's so interesting about this is the amount of money that was poured into outside advertising.
Wow.
Flyers, mailers.
Just for this little
both,
race.
Right. I mean, it really is two things. And I think part of it is it's sort of we're continuing to see the fallout of kind of the polarization of state politics under the last legislative session with Bill O'Brien. And secondly, the role of advocacy groups and the willingness of these advocacy groups to spend money at the very kind of local grassroots level. So everything at the grassroots has kind of been sort of linked up to the sort of larger ideological split between conservatives and progressives in the state. And O'Neill had a lot of help from unions and Hutchison had help from groups like Citizens for a Strong New Hampshire. So, it is fast. You know, I remember not that long ago being amazed that outside groups were spending money on congressional races. Now they're spending money on individual ward races. That's
wow.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. And one of our staff members actually lives in that area and says she was surprised at just the amount that was coming through her mailbox. Let's take a call, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Rich is joining us from Jackson. Hi, Rich. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
Great to be with you. Your Friday show is excellent. It really provides a new format. It's really well needed in the state.
Great. Go ahead.
I had two questions about a couple votes that were taken, and one of them you mentioned briefly. The other one you didn't mention at all. I'd like to have an update on it. The voter ID vote, which I believe the House voted on yesterday, and the expansion of Medicaid, which was voted on a couple of days ago, I guess, to prevent it. But I'm not really sure of the details, so maybe you could fill me in.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot. Great questions, Rich. And you're right, we haven't gotten to those. Now, we did do a whole show on Medicaid expansion on Wednesday, I believe. So if you want the details, you can go to nhpr.org and look up that show. But let's talk about these issues real quickly, if I could. He's absolutely right, Josh Rogers. There was some movement on voter ID requirements this week.
Yes, there were two bills up, and the one that passed would be a bill and passed pretty much along party line vote in the House is one that would freeze New Hampshire's current voter ID law in its place. You may recall that law was to be phased in. The final phase would kick in September. So what the House did was said, what we're going to do is we're going to freeze the requirements as they stand, which means when you go to the polls, you'll be asked to show an ID. A fairly wide range of ID, including college IDs, are considered acceptable. If you don't have an ID, you can sign an affidavit attesting to your identity, and you can vote without one. The what was to kick in September would be if you didn't have a state-issued or government-issued ID, a passport and military ID would be acceptable as well as driver's licenses. A poll worker would take your picture, and your identity would be and this is something that was going to cost the state money. And as this moves to the Senate, it'll be interesting to see what happens because the more stringent requirements that were going to kick in September were really things that the House had insisted on last session. The Senate had crafted the first half of the bill, essentially the half of the bill that's in place, the half of the bill that would be preserved under what the House decided to do. So these things get very partisan, election law issues. So this is going to be interesting to watch. But, the law as it stands now was something that was largely crafted by Republican Senator Russ Prescott.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never seen anything, and I've been doing this show almost 18 years. I don't recall them sort of setting up a new system, transitioning slowly to that new system. I've seen that before. But then deciding, Josh, all right, we're going to stop right here. We're not going to go to that third step.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, there were two bills. One was a straight repeal, and it was interesting that the Democrats decided, we're not going to go for that. They could have probably gotten that through the House. That would have failed in the Senate. They said this is a compromise, and while the Secretary of State's and Attorney General's office are still sorting out the upshot of the system, they're still tracking down voters that they couldn't identify. Basically, what happened if you didn't have an ID, a postcard would be sent to your house. You were supposed to return that, and there were a certain percentage of those who haven't been returned. The Attorney General's office was supposed to investigate those. That is ongoing, and that was an argument that Republicans used to say, it's way too premature to undo the second half of this law when we don't really know the implications of allowing people to vote without an ID in the last election.
Dan.
Yeah, that's the on the couple of stories we had on our websites talking about this very issue. about the mailers that weren't returned, and Sean Jasper in the House again saying that this is, you know, it doesn't necessarily suggest that there's voter fraud out there, but there's something amiss. And then of course, the Democrats, Gary Richardson, pointing out that just because a mailer wasn't returned 2 months plus after the election, it doesn't really mean anything. But it's part of that debate. It's very familiar from 2012, and it's not going to go away.
Yeah. Well, Rich, thanks for raising it, because it's something we should cover here. A big vote this week. His other question, Dean Spiliotis, was about Medicaid expansion. A bill sponsored by former House Speaker Bill O'Brien sought to forbid New Hampshire from expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Again, we did a whole program on this on Wednesday. This went down in the House. The House said, no, we want the option to expand Medicaid by a pretty large margin. What's your sense of the Senate, Dean, and how it's going to feel about Medicaid expansion?
Hard to say at this point. I think it is interesting, just for a little bit of background. This is when the Supreme Court decided that Obamacare was constitutional, one of the things they did say was that individual states can opt out if they don't want to participate. And I think Governor Haslam included in her budget address something like $2.5 billion from this over a number of years. And the federal government will fund the first 3 years at 100%, and then it tapers down to 90%. So Republicans and conservatives have said, well, at some point it's going to become an unfunded mandate eventually if the money dries up. So that has been kind of the overriding concern, that this is kind of an example of expanded federal meddling in the state level. It was an O'Brien-sponsored piece of legislation, and Democrats basically, in killing that legislation, sort of kind of put the topic on ice. They are going to go ahead with the expansion. I will say that as far as Republicans and the Senate are concerned, a number of Republican governors around the country, Governor Scott in Florida, Governor Kasich in Ohio, have said, all right, we'll take the money for now, at least for the first 3 years, 100%, and then see what happens. So I think there's been a sense nationally. I think 26 governors have now said they're going to take the money. About 17 are opposed, and 7 are still trying to decide. So there is some, if Republicans want to do this, there is some political cover for doing so, because you've had these very conservative governors. Scott in particular ran for governor in Florida on the premise of not taking the money. He's now taking it. So we'll see. But there has been some movement of Republicans towards, let's at least take the money for the first 3 years.
Yeah, although and you've probably seen this too, yeah. Dean, and Representative O'Brien said this on our show, and others have said, if you look closely at the language of this, there's no legal basis for saying, I'll take it unless the feds don't do their part, and then I'm getting out too. That it's trickier than they would have you believe.
Granted, but I think the political argument there, in terms of having political cover for doing this, because it was such a kind of lightning rod back in the earlier discussion of Obamacare. There've been a number of these episodes over the last 4, 5, 6 years with Obama about states' rights and whether the federal government is overreaching. Not only on this, we saw it on the stimulus package as well.
Sure, Josh, real quick.
Well, one thing that on the Medicaid front that's going to be interesting to watch is the ongoing problem the states had simply with implementing Medicaid managed care, with the pending lawsuit between the hospitals and the state. In order to expand Medicaid, the managed care component is seen as being crucial. And so this is going to be interesting to watch because in the present budget, not the one that they're debating, there was millions of dollars worth of savings included based on creating Medicaid managed care. That was a big priority of Senate Republicans, and like they haven't been able to get that off the ground at all. And
so those
the way in which these issues interrelate is going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, we talked with Speaker Tumpas about that, and I think he said, Josh, please correct me if I'm wrong, that basically you can't expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act here in New Hampshire until you get this managed Medicaid thing off the ground, because you just don't have the providers and the insurers talking to each other.
So this is a real challenge for policymakers.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to turn just real briefly, gentlemen, if we could, from Granite State politics to national politics. But there's a New Hampshire angle to this. Just bear with me. The Republican National Committee on Monday released a sweeping set of recommendations after it didn't fare so well in the 2012 elections. But let's talk about the part most relevant immediately to New Hampshire, Dean Spiliotis. What did the Republican National Committee say in its big right. document about New Hampshire's first in the nation primary.
And I should say, for anybody interested in politics, Democrat or Republican, this is like a 100-page report. It's fascinating reading. We can talk more about that at another time. Basically, what this is the RNC trying to kind of reassert control over the primary process. They feel like the last cycle was kind of unwieldy. It probably damaged the Republican brand a bit.
All those the primary, all those
yeah,
debates,
and sort of people up and down. You know, one week it's Rick Perry, the next week it's somebody else, Michelle Bachmann, et cetera. They thought that was not helpful for the Republican brand. So what they've said a couple things. They said we'll let the early states continue to go first. They sort of carve out states, as they call them in the report. So that would, in theory, suggest that New Hampshire would keep its status as a first in a nation primary. They say they want to switch the focus more towards primaries because that's more inclusive in terms of voter participation to maximize the number of Republican voters. That's something that's giving people in Iowa a little bit of a pause. And then they said they want to move the conventions earlier in the summer.
Much earlier
in the summer. They want to condense the primary schedule, perhaps have regional primaries, so that they can get the attention off of this sort of interminable meandering primary process and focus on the general election. Now, these are debates we've had for a long time about regional primaries and rotations, et cetera. The problem is that the process is fundamentally decentralized. It's driven by the individual state legislatures and state governments. There's only so much the RNC can do to control the process. They can try to penalize individual states. They can try to penalize candidates. It's a very difficult thing to control, but it certainly is fascinating reading, and I think it's, in general, it's pretty good news for New Hampshire, although, you know, some people have suggested if you condense the schedule, that's going to favor big money, high name recognition candidates, and that will somehow undercut the sort of tradition of the, up-and-coming candidate that people don't really know about until after New Hampshire, Iowa, et cetera.
And Dean, I'm going to throw this last question at you, too.
All right.
You're a dog owner.
Yes, I am.
You'll be interested to know that the New Hampshire House voted this week to allow people to bring their pets into restaurants, outdoor areas. An overwhelming vote, 307-25.
You know, people love their dogs. I'm a veteran dog owner. I have some concerns about kind of, you know, the sort of the level of training for a dog. And
one dog versus another
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, and sort of, you know, people who don't like dogs or have fear of dogs or allergies, et cetera, even though it's outdoors. I think there are a lot of kind of practical questions, but I know a lot of dog owners are going to be very happy about this.
All right. Well, we will see what the Senate does with this, and then we'll see what cat owners decide to do. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot. Josh Rogers is NHPR's senior political reporter and editor. Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. And Dan Tuohy, associate regional editor for Patch.com in New Hampshire. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with the question of government's role in fighting obesity, given the recent challenge to New York City's supersized soda ban. Then we sit down with Mark Huddleston, president of the University of New Hampshire. And on Friday, a new tradition on The Exchange, our weekly news roundup, where we look at the issues Granite Staters are talking about. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show with the Domestic Hour of the Friday.